Yesterday on Current State, WKAR's Peter Wharf brought us part one of his interview with author John Rosengren about his new book, Hank Greenberg, The Hero of Heroes. This year marks the 80th anniversary of the Hall of Famer's rookie season. Peter and John's Monday discussion focused on Greenberg's early career and the socially and politically turbulent times of the 1930s. A Bronx native and son of Jewish immigrants, Greenberg faced not only the challenges of batting against Bob Feller, Lefty Grove, and Dizzy Dean, but also the rampant anti-Semitism of his time, from players and from fans alike. In part two of their conversation, Peter Wharf and John Rosengren take us to the peak of Hank Greenberg's career and the collision of baseball stardom and World War.
Shortly after Congress implemented the draft, Hank was one of the first players drafted in the spring of 1941. At the time, he was the most popular athlete in America. Remember, spring 41, this is before Joe DiMaggio's hit safely in 56 games, before Ted Williams has hit 400 for what will be the last time. Greenberg is the reigning AL MVP, so he's the best player in his league the previous season, 1940. He's the highest paid ball player of the day, and because baseball is the national pastime, he is the most popular athlete in the country. And he requested that he could play out the 41 season before he went into the Army. Now, this also was before America was in the war. And he knew that his earning potential was greatest when he was at the peak of his career, and that he only had a few years when he could play, and then he wouldn't be able to earn money playing ball anymore. So he wanted to make the most of that. Well, that touched off this national debate where he became the flashpoint for the people arguing, yes, you should be able to pursue the American dream in our capitalist society and make as much money as you can, versus the other side saying, no, when one is called, one should immediately fulfill one's patriotic duty to serve the country. Well, then it got more complicated when a doctor noticed Hank had flat feet,
right,
and thought he wasn't fit to serve. And people said, hey, wait a minute, this guy can run around the bases, but he can't march and carry a rifle. So he went in May 7th, 1941, served 8 months, and once he went in, people quickly forgave him and said, good, he's doing his duty, and he became a model soldier, and they're happy with him. Well, Congress changed the law. Men over 30 didn't have to serve anymore, and so he was honorably discharged December 5th, 1941. He was eager to resume his playing career, get back in the field with the Tigers, and then, of course, 2 days later, Pearl Harbor's attacked.
On December 7th, 1941, Japan, like its infamous Axis partners, struck first and declared war afterwards. Costly to our Navy was the loss of war vessels, airplanes, and equipment, but more costly to Japan was the effectiveness of its foul attack in immediately unifying America in its determination to fight and win the war thrust upon it, and to win the peace that will follow.
Greenberg became the first major leaguer to re-enlist. And when he did so, he knew it was going to be a long war. He figured that the decision to go back in meant that his playing days were over. Well, people lauded him for being willing to make that personal sacrifice for the common good, and to saw him then really as a true hero, not just for the Jewish people, but for Americans. And that's when he really became, you know, a hero of heroes. He served 4 years and didn't get out until 1945. Mid-season, and again was one of the first stars to come back. And that's another amazing story.
It's an amazing story in that Greenberg came back from the war, and in several instances in what remained in the season, went on one of the great comeback tears of all time.
When he came back in July 1945, the country was looking to baseball to recover from the war and the sacrifices the people had made during war. And they turned to the national pastime for healing. And they figured if the national pastime, bad as it had been in the era of replacement players, could return to its glory, Americans could feel a sense of normalcy again, and that would be healing. And so Greenberg became the test case. If he could do it, they figured the stars that followed could do it. In 4 years in the military, he had played only three exhibition games. Well, many other players played their entire stint. He only played these three games. he was rusty. He was also 34 years old. The cards were definitely stacked against him. But he came back, and in his first game back, he hit a home run. And there was just this delirium in Detroit and around the country that, yes, maybe it is possible. Well, he went through the second half of that season, and on the final day of 1945 baseball season, in the ninth inning, Greenberg hit a grand slam to clinch the pennant for the Tigers. And people rejoiced all over. In Detroit, they rejoiced. Jews around the country rejoiced. And there's in the Aviva Kempner's film, The Life and Times of Hank Greenberg, Senator Carl Levin quotes the Detroit newspaper that said, call him the hero of heroes, call him the champion of champions. And he says, I almost weep saying that, you know, 50 years later, remembering just what a great feeling it gave him. As a little kid when he was maybe 9 years old, listening to that game on the radio and running around his house like crazy after Greenberg hit the home run.
It's the War Victory Series between the Cubs and Tigers, managed by two veteran campaigners, Charlie Grimm and Steve O'Neill. It's the sixth game of the series. Hank Greenberg comes to bat in the eighth inning with one on and the Cubs leading 7-5. Ray Prim, who replaced the injured Claude Passo, is pitching for the Cubs, who have to win to send the series into a seventh game. Greenberg hammers the ball into the left field bleachers and ties the score 7-7.
Hey, John, have you ever sat around and thought about who you would cast in the movie?
Gregory Peck.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work anymore.
Right.
I don't know who would be the Channing Tatum, maybe. I'm not sure who would play the best Greenberg. You know, Greenberg himself had these movie star
exactly.
good looks. He's 6'4".
Yeah.
He wears his hair a little longer than anyone else. The only problem is, he was a terrible actor. There's this film called The Kid from Cleveland. I don't know if you've seen it. Bill Veeck, in 1949, allowed a film crew to film this movie about this kid who kind of hides out at the ballpark, picks refuge at the ballpark. And there are a bunch of players in it, Lou Boudreau and others from the Indians. But Hank and Veeck are in it, and Hank has a couple lines, and he says them just so stiffly and so... it's kind of like with a smirk on his face, like, can you believe I'm doing this?
That was a good clean single, son.
Yeah, as good as Lou could do and not nearly so expensive.
Better, Bill, especially against a pitcher like that.
Who was pitching?
A ghost, I guess, Mr. Greenberg.
Did you ever bet against a ghost, Hank?
I sure did. His name was Dizzy Dean. I never even saw the ball.
I think it was the beginning and the end of his film career.
John, let me ask you about another scene that I thought was very touching. And that's the story of Hank and a young woman named Marjorie Nash. And if you don't mind, I'd like to read a little bit of this story.
Okay.
From the chapter, The Golden Mark. With every home run he hit, Hank received a card in the mail. The envelopes, addressed simply to Briggs Stadium, Detroit, each had a silhouette drawing of number 5, completing his swing with a ball, showing the number of the homer he had just hit. Inside was a stick figure cartoon and a short note. They came from an art student at Wayne State College named Marjorie Nash. She had started sending cards in 1935. She also sent ballplayers and movie stars of the day, Jimmy Stewart, Barbara Stanwyck, Clark Gable, Betty Davis, Fred McMurray, etc., skillfully rendered pencil sketches that they returned autographed. She received her first signed portrait from Greenberg in September 1935, noting in her diary, Hank sent my picture back autographed. He also sent me a card. He's a swell guy.
Yeah, it's sweet, isn't it?
It is.
So the two of them struck up first this pen pal relationship, but then they met, and they seemed to really like each other. Hank would give her passes to come to games, and she would continue to send these notes whenever he hit a home run. And they exchanged gifts that Christmas time, and Hank bought her some perfume. And so they became close. And one day, Hank went to visit her at her house, and Marjorie's younger brother was just beside himself. Like, here comes Hank Greenberg, you know, the star of the Detroit Tigers, pulling up his car in front of their house, and he's all gaga. And the mother sends him out back to play and leaves them alone. So Hank comes in, he spends a little time at the house, with Marjorie, meets her mother, and leaves. And when Maurice, Marjorie's father, found out about this, he was livid. he said, I don't ever want that Jew coming in my house again.
Wow.
And as a working class man in Detroit, he unfortunately spoke what many of the people thought. And as a result, Marjorie broke off the relationship, and the two never did see each other again. So she kept his autographed picture up on her dresser.
So that sweet story ends up very bitter and sad.
Right. And an unfortunate reminder of the depth of feeling, the antipathy toward Jews during that time. You know, it was a time when anti-Semitism was as widely practiced and as socially acceptable as Jim Crow laws.
John Rosengren is the author of Hank Greenberg, The Hero of Heroes, published in 2013 by New American Library. John, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us about Hank Greenberg.
You're welcome, Peter. My pleasure. Thanks for your interest.
For Current State, this is Peter Wolf.
America, love.